Stand by. Your Steve Jones Show audio is loading now. SteveJonesShow.com podcasts are sponsored by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury, the beverage supermarket.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
All right, welcome. Great to have you with us on this Friday. Boy, the weather changed dramatically.
When did it become October?
Yeah, well, it's Memorial Day weekend. Be safe as you travel around. Actually, the birthplace of Memorial Day unofficially is in Bowlesburg.
I think you said that. Was it yesterday or the day after? The day before? I didn't know that.
Yeah. Three women. I believe it was in 1863-64, went to decorate the graves of military personnel in the Bowlesburg Cemetery. Now, the official birthplace, as recognized by the government, is in Waterloo, New York. But unofficially, and there are several places around the country that have claimed this, but Bowlesburg's one of them. They claim they did it first. And they have a big celebration there. Craft fair. Cannons, which was really great. Last year I gave them your coordinates.
I don't remember it being an issue, so you must have written them down wrong.
No, they came up short. Distance problem. Windage and elevation. But they have the battery, Battery B is there. They have a big craft fair, which, I could care less about, but that's fine.
You're rather crafty.
Yeah. Well, I used to have to broadcast from that thing all the time, every year, and you have to come up with something different every 10 minutes, every 10 minutes, every 10 minutes. Well, after you do that for, a dozen years or whatever, you got to do it. I guess I must have done it for, I think I did it for like 13 or 14 years. Your desire to go back dies. He said, well, you don't have to do it anymore. I was like, I don't want to go. Yes, you've been a hostage. You don't want to go back to the dungeon. All right. Let's bring in Tony DeFazio, Pittsburgh Sports Report. Are you going to watch more highlights as I do these things or what?
Yeah, I'm watching the highlights of practice, as you like to call it.
Well, what is it? Is it a race?
No, it's not a race.
Then what is it?
I like to refer to it as the warm-up or tune-up before the race.
Yeah, okay. I watch Penn State football warm-up and tune-up Monday through Thursday. It's called practice. All right. Tony DeFazio, Pittsburgh Sports Report is on. Tony, great to have you with us.
I'm not taking any cell phone video, so I assume we should be okay.
Well done. Well done. Penguins, that was as impressive a display, especially offensively, I think, as you could possibly see, is what we saw on the road the other night. I was just thoroughly, thoroughly impressed.
Yeah, I think that was the snapshot, right, of what this team can do, no question. I think 5-on-5, the last couple of games, they've been very good, both of those games in Ottawa. Now, they lost one of those. They're, for some reason, having mental gaps and gaps of focus on the power play. You can't give up shorthanded goals every game in the playoffs and expect to win. But on the other hand, Steve, like you said, offensively, man, oh, man, this team just has players on every line that can score, and they come at you in waves. And I think that they eventually just wear you down, not only physically, but also mentally. It's tough being able to cover every single spot on the ice at all times. And the way the Penguins were playing in the third period the other day, that's exactly what Ottawa had to do. And that's just very, very difficult to do with the talent that Pittsburgh brings at you shift after shift. So a lot of people said it, Steve, before the playoffs, that if Pittsburgh is focused, should be able to We've seen that focus wane at times, but as you get deeper into the playoffs, there's less and less excuse for that to happen. And I think the bar was set with what they did in the third period on Wednesday night.
I think, though, what I've found interesting is that when the Penguins have found trouble, they have really buttoned it down in the defensive end. I mean, when they have found some trouble, Islanders early against Ottawa, they have buttoned it down in the defensive end. Then they get into these lapses after that, like, okay, we're doing fine, we got it made. But your thoughts on what, you know, when they decide to play defense, how good are they?
Yeah, I mean, I think they are, you know, the legitimate cup favorite when they decide to play defense, and they've proven that they can do that. You know, I do think that teams with a lot of speed can rattle them at times and can get to them. But at the same time, this is the playoffs, and you're supposed to get tested, and it's what you do with those tests that kind of plans out the rest of that course, and they've passed their tests so far. Like you said, when things have gotten tough, they have buckled down. I think the goaltending is another issue to watch. You know, Bocoon has been great. He's never been this good for this long in the postseason, so that's probably something to keep an eye on. But at the same time, maybe part of the reason they're playing that button-down defense is because they're playing in front of a goaltender who didn't come into the postseason as their number one.
I think that he was to the doorstep of losing a Game 5 assignment at the end of the first period. And I think that you can't change him now. But I thought he was to the doorstep. I thought that the first period the other night, he was no better than okay. And then all of a sudden they did this. And it's like, yeah, he's fine.
You know, I don't dispute that. I think that there's been a couple of periods here or there where you've said, okay, I think we've ridden this guy long enough, but then he's risen to the occasion and made big-time saves after that. He struggled a little bit early, I think, in this Ottawa series, and then he made some big-time saves on a couple of breakaways. I think that was game two, maybe. Then he had the good game that the Penguins ended up, you know, making that mistake at the end, and it went to overtime, and he played well there. And you're right, then he came out and struggled in the first period, again, was out of position at times. But, you know, he's risen up and made the saves when he has to make them. And with the offense this team has, that might be all the Penguins need, is a guy who's going to make the saves he's supposed to make, because they're going to score goals, you know. And yes, they will run into a goalie here or there that's going to stone them for a certain amount of time. But, boy, it's tough to keep them off the board for any extended period of time. And obviously a seven-game series is probably extended enough for this team to score the way they can.
All right. The importance of somehow getting this thing out of the way tonight, just from a rest point of view, especially with a compressed regular season schedule.
Yeah, I agree. You know, no question, when you have your foot on the throat, you want to go ahead and crush the windpipe, right? To use a graphic description. But
they've
got them against the wall. You want to eliminate them when you have the chance to do that, especially at home. You hate to have to make a trip back to Ottawa. And like you said, then those games start to stack up. Everybody, you know, there's four teams who have three wins right now in both conferences. So it looks like people are about to finish other teams off, and you don't want to be the one team that keeps letting the other team continue to show life. So I agree with that. The team got older at the trade deadline, so I think that maybe makes rest even more important for guys like Morrow and Ginla. And some of these other guys who are, fighting injury, although I suppose every team has plenty of injuries that they're fighting at this point in the season.
James Neal has been fabulous on the power play in his career and has been fabulous on the power play with the Penguins. But when they acquired Jerome McGinley, he became the guy on the left side that they really wanted to feed and fire. To see Neal step up the way he did in Game 4, what does that do for the all-around presence of the Penguins and the depth of scoring?
Oh, I think it's enormous. I mean, I think it's absolutely huge. And Evgeny Malkin talked about it before Game 4.
Yeah.
Talked about how Neal was this close to getting on the board and making a big difference. And he really showed it on a couple of different occasions. He was skating well, in addition to having that sniper of a shot that he has. But, yeah, that's just another guy who adds, you know, another dimension where you have to just cover every single spot on the ice. And you know, you look at some of the shots that Neil fired into the net on Wednesday, and, you know, you're impressed by that. And then you think, man, oh, man, just like you said, this guy, you know, got pushed out of the way when Jerome Iginla came aboard. So he's, what, the fourth or fifth best offensive threat on that team. And that's just what makes it so difficult for teams to contend with. And I do think that it's not just a physical issue trying to defend the Penguins. I think mentally it's just very, very difficult trying to keep your focus every second of every shift because there's guys all over the ice, like James Neal, who can score from almost anywhere on the ice.
And then there are the Pirates, who have very quietly in the background have put together, I believe, what, the third best record in the National League right now? I mean, the third best record in the National League. And they're 18-9 at home. What's the feeling around that part of the city?
You know, I think it's a cautious optimism. You know, Steve, I mean, we've seen these guys play well before, so nobody wants to get fooled again. But at the same time, there are some subtle differences to what they're doing this season and some not-so-subtle differences. There's balance across the lineup. When Andrew McCutchen was slumping, they were still winning.
Right.
They've got depth, you know, pitching depth. It's not necessarily an all-star rotation, but everybody, just about every day, can get other teams out. You know, they can record major league outs, and that sounds simplistic, but there were rotations that the Pirates had very recently where guys simply couldn't do that. You had guys who couldn't get out of the second and third inning. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, and then the bullpen has been very, very good. So when you have that balance and when you have that depth, and especially the depth, maybe, just maybe, there's reason to believe that the guys won't get tired out, that they won't be exhausted.
And Tony breaking up just a little bit. So I think what we'll do is, since the cell is going, we'll go. Tony, thanks so much. Appreciate it. Tony DeFazio, Pittsburgh Sports Report. Actually, the Pirates have the third best record in all of baseball right now. How's practice going?
I haven't seen the Pirates practice yet today.
Yeah, but Indianapolis practice, you know.
I'm done with the highlights now.
There are no highlights. It's practice.
None to you.
Look, I speak for America.
You know, you were talking about the Pirates, Steve. I would like to know how a team that's hitting barely 250 wins as many games as they have lately.
I'm wondering how you put something on like a few meaningless laps on Friday and it translates into Sunday.
Well, you just have to watch Sunday and find out.
It's practice. I told you, what does Jim Furyk do? Or Phil Mickelson or whatever. What do they do when they play a practice round?
They play multiple balls on the same hole.
Yeah,
I get that.
They play multiple balls. They experiment.
Well, and I saw a lot of that today. I saw cars driving three or four different lines.
But see, you think it's like what they're doing is competitive.
No. I have never said that.
You actually think they're racing out there.
No, what I said is they're racy. That's different. They're being racy, which means they're trying different lines. They're actually making some interesting passes that they normally wouldn't make, which tells me that the cars are working really well, which means we're going to have a very exciting Indianapolis 500 come around noon Eastern time tomorrow, Sunday, rather.
It's a hard 48 hours for you, isn't it?
No, but you know what? It used to be much better. I mentioned that Jason had made a comment on Facebook, and I had mentioned this. ESPN Classic used to run Classic Indy 500s the entire weekend from Friday night right through Saturday night, early Sunday morning. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That was great.
Yeah. Your question about the Pirates.
Yes, how can a team that hits, yeah, with the exception of McCutchen, how does a team hitting 250 win so many games?
Well, Okay, they're actually 23rd in the majors in batting average. Now, their on-base percentage is a little bit better. The 20th in on-base percentage, and they're also, which means it translates to 19th in runs scored. Not great, but when you have a pitching staff that is second overall in ERA, when that pitching staff is number one in the majors in batting average against it, you know, teams are only hitting 224 against the Pirates. Their whip is third. Now, again, this will be the part. Now, I'm going to tell you right now, here's the part that will derail the Pirates again. Are you prepped?
I'm ready.
They are 21st in quality starts.
That's not good.
Once again, when you are putting, it's not a question of like, oh, yeah, lousy quality starts. You know, because it doesn't matter. The bullpen's doing great. The problem is there are too many innings being pitched by the bullpen and middle relief now that in August will cost them. You need more quality starts. Because when you look at the total staff, 3.24 ERA, that's second in all of Major League Baseball. Batting average against that staff is just 224. No staff has a lower batting average against them than this one does. None. Zero. They're number one. You know, walks, hits per inning pitch, third overall in all the majors. Incredible. But 21st in quality starts, they've only had 21 quality starts this year out of 47 games. Fewer than half. If 21 quality starts out of 47 games, it's too many innings for the bullpen. That will be their downfall if they can't correct it. Today's show brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury. I stocked up when the week began because I knew Kevin would be talking a lot of open wheel racing all week. And I freely admit I needed something to take the edge off. Lots of snacks. Buter, pickle bar.
Pickles.
As we speak. We'll continue with more on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
It's the Memorial Day sales event at Sunbury Motors Lincoln Hyundai. Choose from over 50 new Hyundais with savings over $3,000. Sunbury Motors Hyundai is the fastest growing import dealer in Central PA. The fuel saving 2013 Hyundai Elantra starts at $16,645. Pick from over 15 of the sporty 2013 Hyundai Sonatas that are really turning heads. And they're as low as $18,990. SMC has a good selection of all-wheel drive Hyundai Tucson and the hot new sleek 2013 Veloster. Hyundai has America's best warranty at 10 years or 100,000 miles. And during Sunbury Motors Memorial Day sales event, you can get financing as low as 0%. Sunbury Motors Lincoln has the totally redesigned 2013 MKZ that is a must drive on your new car shopping list. SMC is making luxury affordable by taking over $10,000 off on a new Lincoln Navigator. It's the Memorial Day sales event at Sunbury Motors Lincoln Hyundai in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza. Look for the black building directly across from Wise Markets. Also at sunburymotors.com. Hurry, sale ends May 31st.
The best get-togethers start with a trip to the beverage supermarket, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury. Why? Because Brewers Outlet has not only a great selection of beer, including imports and microbrews, but also a lot more. Brewers Outlet has water, soda, they roast their peanuts every day, and you can't forget about stopping by the pickle bar. Look for great deals on wine coolers and all your favorite snacks. Before you enjoy those special times with family and friends, make your visit first to the beverage supermarket, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury.
Boy, I tell you, when they invented flat screen HD, your experience on the Indianapolis 500 changed.
You know when I was sold on high definition television?
Saw the first time I saw it.
But no, it wasn't on a regular show. It was watching football. Actually, it was college football. I think I shared this with you before. It was watching a Boise State game on the blue turf and just seeing how blue it was and being able to watch the safeties cheat up. That's when I said, I have to get one of these. That's when my wife said, great, that's exactly what I wanted to hear.
Hockey, you can see the puck. All right.
That's true. So, that's true. Without the little glowing thing that...
Actually, to be honest with you, I never ever had trouble. I've watched so much hockey in my lifetime.
I've had trouble.
The Bruins were the most popular. I mean, believe it or not, you know, you can talk about how much the Red Sox were loved and the whole thing in New England. The Bruins were the most popular team in the early 70s. In fact, the Boston Globe did a poll. Favorite Boston athlete of all time. Okay, now who do you think should have won?
Well, the first thought would have been Tom Brady.
Okay, well, again, it's, yeah.
First
thought for many in New England would be Ted Williams.
I would have said, but honestly, I probably wouldn't have thought of Ted Williams. I would have thought of Bobby first.
But Bobby Orr won.
I really would have thought of Bobby
first.
And
won big. Bobby Orr is the single most popular athlete in the history of New England sports.
Yeah, I would
without question.
I would have said Bobby Orr, then Tom Brady, and then Ted Williams.
Yeah,
I know that shocks you, but
one time they did something where they wanted to have the legends of Boston sports on. They had Bird, they had Ted Williams, Brady, and Orr. Okay, I think it was WBZ TV in Boston did this. When it was over with. Limos pulled up. Limo took away Bird. Limo took away Brady. Limo took away Ted Williams. Or wanted to know if they validated parking. No, I mean, that's no joke.
I know.
That's no joke.
Now, before I started doing this show with you, I would have guessed Tom Brady anyway, and maybe Williams too.
Yeah. Bobby Orr is the most popular athlete in the history of New England. It's, you know, and not only that, but he's... to this day still. He just celebrated his 65th birthday. Reporter tried to do a story with him. He says, you know, I don't like to do these things, but I'll do it.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Tell me practice is over.
I believe it is, yeah. Yeah.
Well, for the first time in weeks, a normal show. All right.
That's sad.
What's sad? I have just brought joyous news to the land.
You're going to be riveted on Sunday. I don't want to hear it. I know you'll be riveted on Sunday.
I know, but I don't need to keep talking about it until then, okay?
I'll remind you of this.
My nerves are frayed.
I'll remind you of this when the NCAA tournament comes up next time.
Yeah, but the ratings for the NCAA tournament are exponential compared to what you're going to see on Sunday.
That may be true.
Yeah, it's not maybe. All right. You know, when you have people involved with their own teams, alma maters, things like that, even casual fans are alma maters in, that's why it's so successful. Today's show brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury. In fact, I'm hooked up intravenously to them right now and have been all week as Kevin has talked about open wheel racing. Thank you, Brewers Outlet. Stock up beverages, snacks, pickle bar. As we speak, Buhner at the pickle bar.
I think Buhner has been pickled.
Oh, we now bring in Neil Riddell, my good friend. Great to hear from you.
Hey, thank you, Steve.
this is not a dull job in any way, shape, or form. I mean, things come up from time to time in this, and it's amazing what you have to deal with. Did you ever think you'd see anything come up with, like, the Sports Illustrated thing in the last couple of weeks?
Well, did I ever? Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, you're constantly on guard for different things. I don't think it didn't totally stun me that they were working on something. I mean, Penn State's a national topic. I mean, you look at Sports Illustrated, you know, not only last week, but even today, I pick it, and it's certainly thinner and thinner, unless it's the swimsuit issue encyclopedia. Right. So I'm sure they're trying to be as selective as they can and try to find topics that will have some you know, national readership. I'm not sure interest. I guess it would be interest, but for sure readership.
Yeah. Were you surprised, based on the response Penn State gave, were you surprised it died as quickly as it did? Because it really did.
Yeah, I think they did a good job getting ahead of it and trying to diffuse it. I mean, there were certainly things in there that maybe I had heard, I'm sure you know or heard, but didn't have the depth of reporting that I thought that they did some of it. And I think, you know, you ask kids today, if you go to classrooms, which I know you do, or, you know, what is news? And to me, news is what people don't know. And I think there were things in there that Penn State fans didn't know, you know, certain relationships and whatnot, conflicts over the years. So, you know, I think in that regard, I didn't just totally dismiss it or cancel my subscription, where, you know, some people in the email chains that would go around, you know, did that. But I thought that there were some things in there that were relevant.
When you look at something I brought up, and I wanted to get your perspective on this, Penn State will play Pitt 4 years, 16, 17, 18, 19, 16, 18 at Hines, 17, 19 here. In a nine-game conference schedule, and I broached the subject on the air the other day, but I wanted to get your perspective. In a nine-game schedule, how often as a non-conference opponent do you think Penn State should play Pitt? Every year, sometimes, and I know that this won't qualify for you because I know you care far more than I don't care.
You say you don't care about that series?
No. I said the third category was I don't care.
Oh, you know, no. It's one of my favorite subjects. you know, I don't know if it's realistic to play every year if you're playing a nine-game. Well, the fact that you have a 12-game schedule, so you have three open dates, I'd love to see them play every year. I would. And here's why. I think that Penn State in the move to the Big Ten has lost that passionate rivalry. You have big games. You may have a rivalry more with Ohio State, but their rival, real rival, is Michigan. We all know that. I think Penn State lost that for sure. Pitt lost it. Pitt had something going with West Virginia that it doesn't have now. But I look at it, Steve, especially with bye weeks and post-Thanksgiving games, I don't know that Beaver Stadium is ever going to sell out for a post-Thanksgiving game if it's not Pitt. Right. And even now it will be tough with Pitt because there's been such a separation, so many younger people who are 20 years old who are passionate Penn State fans, current students, don't have a history with Pitt. But I think that, unfortunately, in college sports, one of the things that really has been lost are those some of the great historical rivalries, and I think Penn State-Pitt was one of them. And at the risk of another non-conference game that will come to you every year without a return and what would be perceived to be as an automatic win, I would go ahead and play Pitt. I doubt it would ever be the end of the year, and I know times have really changed, so, you know, I get that. I don't know that it'll ever be, even if it was resurrected on an annual basis. You know, if you're not playing them at the very end of the year, you still have that issue with your stadium, with the students off after Thanksgiving.
Right, and what I thought of, you know, and these are random on-air thoughts, I said, look, maybe you can do it in such a way where you play them home and away, then the next 4 years, another opponent plugged in with BCS implications to it, then play them again home and away, and then 4 years. That way, in 16 years, you actually play Pitt 8. And that it's there, but because of the opening, is you have to have, you know, because look, economics tell you you have to have 7 home games. I mean, it's just that's just an economic reality,
right? Yeah, I mean, I think anything, that would be better than the last 16 years, your
right.
scenario. I thought at one point maybe can you commit to opening at home, a 20-year series, opening at home, and then closing at home. And I think that would have added up to kind of like a 6-4, 12-8 type arrangement.
Right.
And I don't know that Pitt would have bought it, but that would have been maybe their problem. You know, and for years, so many of the games were played in Pittsburgh. If you go back to up until really about 1970, almost all the games, it was never a home and home. But Vino and other people will tell you that that was done by mutual agreement, that Penn State liked the exposure. They could play in 60,000-seat Old Pitt Stadium when they had Beaver Field. So some of it was mutually accepted. But the fact is, most of the games were played in Pittsburgh.
Right. And then, you know, in the Three Rivers Stadium thing was because of lights. You know, they had a chance to be on a prime time, so they played Three Rivers Stadium. And that's one of the reasons why they did it.
Yeah. I mean, I wish that the Big Ten, that the next two teams it took, and we know it won't happen because of the financial implications and of the ACC and whatnot. But to me, it would be most exciting for Penn State fans if they took Pitt and Syracuse.
Right.
I do think taking Maryland and Rutgers is a positive step as far as the Eastern travel, but I don't think that would excite people as much as Pitt and Syracuse.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with that. And it's just not going, you know, you and I both know it's realistically not going to happen. It's just not, you know, it's not realistic, but you certainly, in terms of the theory, I'm on the same page with you in terms of theory. It would have been great for Penn State to have that. It would have been great for the fans. I mean, it's the one thing I'll say about Maryland and Rutgers, at least for the fans, it's an opportunity for those in the eastern half of the state where now they have drivable games.
Right, and I think that'll be great. I mean, how many times have you turned around and you're out at Iowa, and you with the basketball, for, you know, even more, you're out of Minnesota, even Wisconsin, although that's been a competitive series. You're out at these places, and you just wonder, you probably could find a comparable opponent in the East. And to me, Syracuse and Pitt football probably lost more than Penn State football did. And when they did not get Penn State into the Big East, once they were already there with those period of 5 or 7 years before Penn State got into the Big Ten, I think those are, you know, history will tell us that those were some of the mistakes that were made. It would have been nice to all be under an Eastern umbrella.
Yeah, that was a great opportunity lost at that point.
Right, and I think it was interesting. I saw Jim Boeheim made a comment. Maybe he was being interviewed maybe by Mike and Mike shortly after he passed at 900 or one, whatever milestone he got early in this basketball season. The Big East was beginning to crumble, and he said that they underestimated what not having a football component would do.
And if you go back, though, and we turn the clock back, and it's 1979 again when Dave Gavitt did this. When Dave Gavitt did this, we didn't have the Oklahoma-Georgia ruling at that point. We didn't have what we have today that opened up the television landscape for college football. In 1979, two college football games a season, maybe max for a team would be, for a school would be on ABC, and you didn't have, you know, and of course ESPN wasn't informed until September 5th, 1979. So when Gavitt did this, he was trying to organize Eastern basketball. And so his idea in that part had lasting and had staying power to it. But after the Oklahoma Georgia thing went, that's where the opportunity was lost.
Yeah. And I mean, I don't think there was really a connection. Penn State didn't have that, other than geographically, I don't think Penn State had that much in common with Providence and Villanova and Georgetown and Seton Hall and St. John's. And I thought it was one of the comments, and maybe we mentioned this a month or so ago, Steve, I thought, you know, you look at Boeheim's perspective, and then somebody asked Patrick Ewing, because there was a lot of articles being written. I wrote one here about Doug West from Altoona when he played at Villanova at the height. He had gotten to Villanova the year after they won the national championship. But somebody asked Patrick Ewing about the crumbling of the Big East, and he said, quote, "We never should have let those football schools in."
Right.
So everybody has their – I actually think the Catholic seven or with the name the Big East, I actually think that will do well, and they'll all be peers, and they won't have to fight the football.
I think they'll do very well because they've already established, each of them, a tradition and a viewership
right
through the old Big East. So it's not a cobbling together of schools as an alliance that's uncomfortable. It's a cobbling together of traditions that the fans there are used to seeing. So I think they're in good shape. It's the American Conference that's going to have trouble.
Who's all in that?
UConn, Cincinnati, South Florida. Team of the month.
You know, that's a conference that most of their teams, I would guess, would go somewhere else if they had an opportunity, and they're just trying to survive.
In a heartbeat, and then you see Louisville's going to one more year, and they're going to go to the ACC. For Pitt, though, to me, the landing spot of the ACC, based on how everything has played out, it ended up being a great landing spot, I think, for them.
I agree. I think for their football survival, that will be good. I mean, you're going to get Florida State and Miami coming to town if they with Notre Dame. That should work for Pitt. How well Pitt would draw still for Wake Forest and Maryland, you know, we'll see. Probably will have to depend on how good they are.
Well, I think I can't see Wake Forest, Duke, even North Carolina going in there and drawing well. For Pitt to draw well, it usually has to be Penn State, Notre Dame, and Ohio State in the non-conference.
If they had Penn State or Notre Dame every year on their home schedule, that would probably make a huge difference in their whole season ticket base.
I absolutely agree with you, and I think that has always been an important factor for Pitt football. Yeah. Always,
I was wishing Tom Bradley was going to get that job when it heated up a couple years ago, because I also felt that a lot of Penn State people would take even more of an interest in Pitt, particularly when Penn State was on the road. I think that would have been just such a cool Western Pennsylvania hire when you look at Bradley's connections in Pittsburgh, in Johnstown, in State College.
Right.
I really was hoping, because I didn't get the idea that it was ultimately going to work out at Penn State, even though a lot of people wanted it to. That was kind of a regret, because it looked like it was really pretty heated up there. And Paul Chryst, to his credit, when the Wisconsin job opened, and Alvarez's credit, I mean, there would have been some people that would turn right around and gone back to Wisconsin. But I think the fact that Alvarez had recommended Chryst to Pitt, that showed some integrity.
No question. But I wasn't surprised by that, because I personally don't know him. But I know people who do know him, and I had been. You know, I remember when it came up, when the Penn State job was open, and you know, people were throwing out names left and right, and you know, and someone on this show said, "Who'd be a really good college assistant that somebody should consider?" And I said, "Paul Chryst." 2 days later, Pitt hired him. I thought, well, they were listening to the show, but I'm just saying, you know, but he just has that. He is a football guy. He's not an ego guy. He is. Somebody doesn't, you know, relish or seek out the limelight. He just likes the profession of coaching.
Yeah. And it'll be interesting to see, you know, how they hang in there, what will happen if the SEC takes another couple teams, whether that dips into the ACC or whether the ACC is now pretty solid and protected.
I think the grant of rights solved that. I think the grant of rights that the ACC agreed to, I think, put the brakes on it, because now you have the Big Ten, the Big Ten, the ACC, the Big 12, and the Pac-12 all have grant of rights now when it comes to television. The only one that doesn't is the SEC, ironically. They don't have a grant of rights, which means if you want to go poach one of their teams, but I can't picture anybody leaving. It's like living in Tucson. You don't go to the south of the border to live there, coming over the other side to live in Tucson. So.
Well, you know, one thing with the ACC, and I know a lot of Pitt fans have really enjoyed their Big East basketball these last close to 30 years, But I think they should be have a pretty smooth transition. When you're going to have an opportunity to bring these AC teams in, Coach K and Duke and North Carolina, and then you'll get Louisville not long, Syracuse is preserved. I think Pitt will be fine as far as still having a very exciting basketball product.
Well, in fact, you think of the basketball in this state. Villanova's still now playing in the Big East, you know, the Catholic Seven, which we've talked about. So Villanova's going to bring in quality basketball. Penn State plays in the Big Ten. We know what the Big Ten brings to the table basketball-wise. And Pitt's going to be in the ACC, and we know what the quality of basketball is there. I mean, in terms of the opponents that are brought into this state to play basketball in all three sections of the state, it doesn't really get any better in terms of variety than that.
Yeah. I mean, and that's been part of Penn State's challenge for many years. I mean, because other schools, UConn, North Carolina, Notre Dame, some of these teams have been able to come into Pennsylvania and get a lot of the local players.
Neil, always a pleasure. Appreciate it very much. We're going to take a break here because America awaits the Kevin Herr Indy 500 prediction on News Radio 1070 WKOK. All right. Go ahead. What's your prediction?
For the 500? For the Indianapolis?
No. For Watkins Glen.
I just wanted you to say it. I just wanted to hear you say it. All right, here's my prediction. I think I'm going to be rooting for Marco Andretti. I think starting on outside of row one is going to be very significant for him. I think it's going to be a big help. I think he's driving really well, but I have to agree with Vince Welsh.
Just slow down.
Well, I want to make sure I get it all in.
It's all right.
You've only given me about a half a second to get it all in. No, I have to agree with Vince Welsh. I think Ryan Hunter-Reay right now is overall the best driver in the field, beginning to end, from last year, most consistent. And he's really running consistent laps no matter what it is, whether it's a road course, street course, or oval.
Hinchcliffe, Andretti, Castroneves.
I like your Hinchcliffe idea, but Hinchcliffe is either going to win the race or he's going to be dead last. That's the way it's been this year for him. And
they haven't run ovals.
I know. He's won two races and finished dead last in two. I know this is a favorite pick, but I also like the rookie Munoz.
No.
America
won't accept that.
Well, Juan Montoya and Elio Castroneves were both able to do it in their rookie years.
Yes, I know that. But they're exceptional. All right, so.
Carlos Munoz is pretty exceptional. Watching him go from Indy Lights.
Cliff, Castroneves, Andretti, okay?
All right. You picked the winner last year, didn't you?
Yes, I did. Now, yeah. Look, and that made you angry.
Yes, it did.
Okay. The difference is that when I gave my picks, I did it within 8 seconds. I mean, racing's supposed to be fast. I asked you to predict, and you draw it out like it's a marathon.
Analyzed.
Have a safe holiday weekend, everyone.